It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sometimes I forget about that. You can't minimize the virtual cart player without it stopping playing. But anyway, we got through the intro, and yay! here we are. It is the 11th day of August 2022. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. If you wander by right now, well, goodness gracious sakes alive, you will be greeted by early arrivers. And here we go. Anatole and Roger and Squeaky and Stockton Larry and Theo. And, of course, capably moderated by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan. Steve! Filling in this evening as Slayer of Brain. Go get him, Skeeve. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. I'm a little bit just kind of, from being on the road all day yesterday. But you'll have that. So what does that mean? That means we say thank you to our both 11th and 10th day of the month subscribers. That means thank you to Paul from Parts Unknown. Thank you to Tony and Chico. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you, John. Thank you so very much to Daniel. Thank you to Joe. And thank you again. Paul from Parts Unknown is on the 10th and the 11th. Thank you so much. Thank you to Charles for jumping in. Thank you to Cecilia. And that's pretty much our 10th and 11th of the month PayPal subscribers. You are, in fact, a big part of the reason this program stays on the air, and I cannot thank you enough. So our fundraising goal is at 1090. Of course, I didn't count yesterday because I wasn't here. The bills mount up whether I'm here or not, but I didn't count yesterday, so the fundraising goal is at 1090, and it's, pretty desperate at this point in time, simply because there's a lot of stuff waiting to be paid that badly needs it. I mean, badly, badly. So if you've ever thought about helping out, and you never have before, this is a great time to do that. Now, as to and I have no idea, Squeaky, I have no idea why my avatar is corrupted in the chat room. That's kind of weird. I'll have to figure out a new way to put something else up there. Yeah, because I live for moments like that. Thanks for pointing that out, Squeaky, seriously. So this is, like I said, the 11th of August. The 10th, yesterday, I spent on the road. Some of you may have seen the post, the little mini essay that I put up. No, it's not mini. That's a full essay that I put up over on my Facebook page. Just because it felt the trip felt kind of ironic. like I mentioned on Tuesday, Ferg had an interview. Ralph, that challenge got met. Thank you. That challenge got met on Tuesday. Thank you so much. Unless I missed one. Maybe from, I don't know. Well, I mean, I didn't check email or anything because I was driving. You know, I don't do that when I drive. But I went from here to the far side of Columbus yesterday. And all told, it was a round trip of something over, it's like almost 600 miles. By the time I worked it all out, it was roughly equivalent to driving from here to my hometown in Alabama in a day. But what we did, he's applied for a job in that area, and so we were out, like I said, on the far side of Columbus. Had a really beautiful drive. Went over the Buckeye State River Bridge, which, by the way, is entirely owned by this by West Virginia. But crossed there at roughly Point Pleasant. I sent a note to our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, telling her that I thought of her when I saw the sign, the exit sign to the Mothman Museum. As we started under the bridge, Ferg looked around and said, he was scanning the skies and said, you know, the one creature on Earth that sends me into an absolute case of the horrors, and we have to have a monster named after him in West Virginia. But he was scanning the skies for the Mothman, and we got across the river and into the Buckeye State, so as not to make Nikki cringe, and drove on up through Chillicothe and up past Columbus. You know, we got on Route 20. We went from US 35 to US 23, and that put me in mind of an old Dwight Yoakam song, "Reading, Writing in Route 23." That's what the essay was about. Got up there and he did his testing for the job. Turned out we drove, there was a sign for a Culver's, so that was what we had for dinner. Butter burger and cheese curds and that sort of shilly-shallying. And let's see, for purposes of keeping up with gas prices have dropped below $4 over there. They're still around $4.30 here per gallon. It was down to $3.40 in the Buckeye State. And it was a bit of a culture shock for me, because it's just weird going up into, when you cross from West Virginia into the Buckeye State, it's still Appalachia. There's still a lot of hills, but it gave way fairly quickly to land that you could drop a marble on and it wouldn't roll. It's flat. Cornfields as far as the eye could see. And when we got in the car and headed back, well, we stopped at that Culver's. And when we walked in, Ferg looked at me and said, "We're not going to go through the drive-thru." I said, no, I've been sitting in a car all day long between driving and waiting on you to come out. I need to walk around a little bit. And we walked in, and there were a couple of, looked like probably teenage Mennonite girls. And they turned around, and their eyes got as big as saucers. And they placed their order, and I followed and went on up and placed ours, I admit it's a culture shock. I'm fascinated with that particular culture, insofar as, you know, we missed prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday, so we can talk a little bit about this. Their teachings make a certain amount of sense in terms of how they view The teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of their life. But it was hard to look at those poor girls. At least they're allowed to wear color now. They were wearing a sort of, you know that pink that you'll see on on scrubs in hospitals. It's not like a soft milky pink, and it's not a hot pink. It's more like a dusty pale mauve. Well, they were wearing that, so at least they're allowed color. But as I looked at it, it was like, anything that is compulsory clothing so that the God won't hate you or pinch your head off or send a lightning bolt or anything, it tends to creep me out a little bit because, they wear that stuff by choice. Well, if the threat of eternal damnation and torment is behind the choice, then it doesn't seem like it's really that much of a matter of free will. And it seemed positively Saudi or Afghani. It looked like a burqa without the beekeeper hat covering. And I can't imagine that's a choice freely made. It looked like a sort of built-in compulsory misogyny. I'm not saying they have to look like anything in particular, that they have to I'm trying to sort out something. Okay, there's our problem. It just looks and feels oppressive. And so, we filled up the tank and we came on home, and I was absolutely exhausted. We had great weather all the way. No, it's not a taupe, Anatole. It's a pinkish mauve. But it was off-putting. It looked like just more religion oppressing women for being women. Little bonnets and... Because I think if anybody tried to compel me to wear something like that, they'd at least get a fist in their face. No, hell no. No. I mean, you got to admit, it's got a kind of a Handmaid's Tale vibe about it when you see it. But, there's different sects. Some of them, some Mennonites incorporate completely into society. They dress like ordinary people. They drive cars. And then there are these more old-timey sects where, the gender roles are brutally enforced. In fact, when we were talking about it last night, I told Annette, I remembered there was a story, and I can't remember how far back it was, but it's during the time that this program has been on the air, when the Mennonite or Amish or whatever community, whatever they're calling themselves, in Ohio, were terrorized. They had a terrorist Mennonite in their midst. No, really. It sounds like the setup to some sort of a cheesy skit or a movie plot, but it was years ago, and a guy and some guys that he had influenced began attacking other Mennonite men and shaving their beards. Yeah, because once again, these sects have in common with other monotheistic sects, the Abrahamic faiths, some of them, some Muslim sects, some Jewish sects, and they're obsessed with facial hair. For some reason or another, God won't like them if they get a decent shave. Yeah. But there was Mennonite terrorists running around and cutting off people's beards, and the community was absolutely up in arms. Yeah. We had great weather, though. We did. And until we got back into West, it was gray clouds and everything, but got some blue skies while we were there. And then the minute I got back on I-64, west of St. Albans, the heavens opened, the highway looked like it was made out of black glass, and we crawled the rest of the way home. That was nasty. But we got home and got a good night's rest, but got up today, and I mean, apparently it really took it out of me, but it was, I hope it was a profitable journey. I hope it works out well for FERC. There was a lot of, like, strength testing and, you know, can you do the, you know, putting round pegs in square holes. And he said it was all very, very well organized. And they took his measurements for his work uniform, and everybody wears white white uniforms in the factory, in the plant, like it's some sort of medical facility or whatever, or you know, like they're all professors or anyway, they got his sizes, and he's excited if they offer him the job. It'd be the best job chance he's had in pretty much ever. So we're excited. Hope to hear good news out of it. Don't know yet. That was yesterday. That's why I wasn't around. I saw those folks in Culver's there, and I immediately heard, you know, the end of, what was it, Kingpin? Goodbye, Brother Munson! Goodbye, whore! Yeah. Thank you for getting us started. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. By the way, Tom in sunny San Rafael says, a belated happy Mar-a-Lago search and seizure day for all who celebrate it. Yeah, that'll be... I guess that's, henceforward, that's August the 8th? Yeah? Or, no, the 9th. It's August the 9th is Mar-a-Lago Search and Seizure Day. We will celebrate that in the future every year, we hope. And Ron in Raleigh says, I like that, Tom. There's a movie about an Amish crime boss. I don't remember the title. I'll see if I can find it. That sounds fun. Of course, there's The Witness with Harrison Ford, and then, like I said, you know, Kingpin with Woody Harrelson and Randy Quaid and Bill Murray. And then there was one with Tim Allen. Matt in San Francisco says, mauve, dusty pink. Though, Robin, the memories you trigger, Matt says, in my early 20s as I began my retail management career, my store manager gave me a speech about professional attire. At the time, we were to wear dress pants, tie, etc. The next day, I showed up in mauve pants, pink shirt, mauve belt, mauve tie, pink dress shoes. Day after, green pants, mint green shirt, green tie, green shoes. You get the idea. No one ever spoke to me about professional attire ever again. Thanks for the memory trigger. That I know you had to look absolutely fabulous, Matt. That's a beautiful moment. Oh, God. Yeah, the dinner's coat and tie, so you show up without pants. Yeah, that's But, Matt, I know you know exactly what that color I'm talking. Yeah. Governor-to-be O'Rourke, Steve in New York, says, sorry I'm late, was just wondering if we were going to award Beto O'Rourke a really big old cowbell for his slap down of that maggot. I think that is in order, Steve. Very much in order. It's nice to see when somebody on our side fights back. And fights back with a will. This was a hell of a moment. Beto O'Rourke talking to a group in, where was it? In Texas? I forget the... Yeah. But he was, and he got around to talking about Uvalde. And he was just making his, you know, he was making his campaign pitch. And making sense. Talking about, you know, the madness of allowing ...18-year-olds to buy weapons of war. And he, it turned out there was a maggot in the room with his Greg Abbott sign. Mineral Wells, Texas was the location. It's about 50 miles west of Fort Worth. And I know John Britovo must be positively fit to bust with pride for Beto in this. I mean, he showed that he has the fight necessary to do great things when dealing with insurrectionist and seditionist, possibly even secessionist maggots. Not that long a clip, but it's darned well worth the moments.
I'm going to make sure that now 11 weeks since we lost 19 kids and their two teachers shot to death with a weapon originally designed for use in combat, legally purchased by an 18-year-old. Who did not try to obtain one when he was 16 or 17, but followed the law that's on the books, ladies and gentlemen, that says that you can buy not one, you can buy two or more if you want to, AR-15s, hundreds of rounds of ammunition, and take that weapon that was originally designed for use on the battlefields in Vietnam to penetrate an enemy soldier's helmet at 500 feet and knock him down dead, up against kids.
Now, you may have missed it, but there's a moment there where the maggot, the Greg Asbot supporter, laughs. I wish I was kidding. But I can't imagine why one would. But then again, we're talking about maggots. And in fact, he laughs. Sorry, I don't know why I've disappeared from the chat room, but I have. Try to get back in there. So let me take this back just a couple of seconds so you can hear what caused Beto O'Rourke to do what he did.
penetrate an enemy soldier's helmet at 500 feet and knock him down dead up against kids at 5 feet. It may be funny to you, motherfucker, but it's not funny to me, okay? We're going to make sure that our kids who are starting their school year right now, that they don't have to worry about somebody walking into their school with a weapon like this. That we take common sense steps, we find the common ground, Democrats and Republicans, gun owners, non-gun owners alike.
You know, it says something about where we are as a country when a political candidate turning to a rude, vulgar, bloodthirsty heckler and saying, "It may be funny to you, motherfucker, but it's not to us," is a moment of political heroism. Steve in New York says, "What Beto did, now that's fire in the belly," and it is. And I think maybe this is the kind of approach that we need for the rest of 2022 and heading toward 2024. Get in their faces. Call out how awful they are. Make sure they damned well know how awful they are. And apparently they are the maggots in Texas. What's the word I'm looking for here? Skeert. They are skeert. Because, among other things, it wasn't too awfully long back that a maggot preacher, go figure, a maggot preacher showed up at a Beto event and questioned him, Beto O'Rourke. About his stance on AR-15s. I don't know how the audio will play out on this, but we will certainly find out. This was about a week ago. And there was talk, this toxic character, of course, a minister of the gospel in Hemp Hill, Texas. This loudmouth preacher started blathering on at Beto, and all the while he was carrying an AR-15.
Thank you, Mr. Beto, for being
Thank
here.
You.
And my question is not about a gun. It's actually more important than a question about a gun, and I'm a minister of the gospel here in Hemp Hill. So my question to you, and I would like to follow up with a very short second question, if I may, based on your answer, is have you been born again by knowing Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior? That's the most important question.
Sir, first of all, thank you for coming. You honor us with your presence. I'm a lifelong Catholic, born and raised, baptized.
Okay, so now understand this again. This goober, this gospel sharp, asks him if he has been born again as he is carrying an AR-15 into a peaceful political meeting. And of course, it's also worth noting that the United States Constitution says that there shall be no religious test for the holding of office, and that via the 14th Amendment. That constitutional provision also applies to the states.
First question, important question. Have you been born again? Born again.
And in this case, you know, Beto didn't call him a motherfucker. I think it would have been just fine if he had, but Beto's good at reading the room.
In that church. That's my denomination, and that's the path I've followed and that I'm on right now.
Yes, sir. And just a second quick question is, Genesis 1:26 says we are created in God's image and likeness. And because we're created in God's image and likeness, we're created at conception where the seed meets the egg. And so life, as a Catholic, you probably know that life begins at conception. And so my question is this, is as Christians, how can we deviate from Scripture? All right, I'm not talking about man's law. I'm talking about what God says life is. Because he said, I knew you from your mother's womb. And so when that life is in the womb, and somebody pulls that life out, it's called murder. And I understand the things that's going on in our world about why abortion or why not abortion. Me personally, as a minister of God and a believer in God's word, is this. That if my wife was in jeopardy of dying at childbirth, I would make the decision of my wife over the child. There are great men of God that are products of rape that live today, that if they had been aborted, they would not be here. James Robinson, the great minister of God, is a product of rape. And so my question to you is, as a Christian and as a fellow believer, okay, that believes life begins at conception, how do we deal?
Okay, maybe using James Robinson is a product of rape is not your best look. For anybody who's familiar at all with the gospel sharp industry, James Robinson is just a disgusting hustler of hate. And the fact of the matter is, I can't think of any so-called men of God without whom humanity couldn't get along. There's nobody on this planet who is irreplaceable. There's no human who has ever lived or died, past or present or future, whose non-existence would cause the especially religious divines, ministers, etc., who this world couldn't get along with. I don't care if it's a preacher, a brother, a pastor, a minister, a rabbi, an imam, a monk. I don't care. Yeah, I know, it's sickening, isn't it, Tamara? Tamara said, wow, that armed preacher is hard to listen to. Well, right, because he's so assured in the rightness that he thinks he inhabits. But what he is a theocratic fascist. That's all. And it's a shame that there's nobody. But everybody has to sit and listen quietly because, by God, he brought a goddamned weapon of war to a campaign event in a little, yeah, it looks like a little community center or something like that in a little burg in Texas. But, you know, he's too much of a chicken shit to go to a campaign event without carrying a weapon of war. It says so much more about him than it does about anybody else in that room. That he can't go in amongst a bunch of unarmed, peaceable, probably mostly Democrats, without packing heat. The product of rape, Matt says. So I assume there are rapists who are products of a loving Christian home. The fuck does that have to do with anything? Oh, that's well thought out, Matt. Thank you. That's good. Yeah. And of course, that you know, great people who are products of rape bullshit cannot withstand any degree of scrutiny. But, you know, here we are. And that's the country and the world that we live in. This guy was disgusting. But once again, Beto O'Rourke handled it professionally, purposefully, and intelligently. And what did the creep say? That if his wife was in extremis, he would make the choice to save her life?
But that's man's law and not God's law. What's he saying? That God wants her to die and the baby to live? Yuck. Stephen New York says, the gun-humping gospel sharp, not to be the nerd in the room, but he takes that verse completely out of context. Plainly stated, it doesn't mean what he said it means. Of course it doesn't. They cherry-pick this stuff. You know, if he were to ask an actual, you know, somebody whose book that actually is, like, say, a rabbi, the rabbi would tear him to shreds in a matter of seconds. That's why there's a lawsuit in Florida. We talked about it, Tuesday's show? There's a lawsuit in Florida that's been joined by, I think, a Buddhist priest and a couple of Unitarians and the rabbi who initiated the suit, and there's a physician. And, you know, his understanding as a rabbi is that abortion is a right that Judaism reserves unto a mother. And that no, baby is not a baby until, you know, it's a baby. And that there is a difference between something that looks like a sea monkey and a human baby. Now, what did he say that was? Genesis 1:26. I'll bet you there's some before and after, like Steve says, that means that it doesn't say what. That's God said, "Let us make man in our image." Here's the problem. Well. We're not going to talk about how, if you believe that story about the creation of Adam and Eve, that, well, Eve was the first, she was made from material from a man, and so that, well, no, we better stay away from that. And so we will. And in terms of a bit of breaking, well, not really breaking news, but it was... breaking earlier today, and we will get to Merrick Garland's statement here in a little bit, but even as Merrick Garland was preparing to speak today, some guy at the moment of publication, when I saw this earlier, unidentified dude, and we can be pretty sure we know how he votes, tried to get into the FBI office building in Cincinnati while armed to the teeth. About 9 a.m. today, he attempted to breach the visitor screening facility at FBI of Cincinnati. And a hot pursuit then took place. They shut down part of I-71, which I drove past yesterday, up in the Columbus area. As well as State Route 73 in both directions, all of that gets shut down as the Ohio State Police and the FBI gave chase to the man. There was a lockdown in Clinton County with businesses and home people in their homes being told to lock their doors and not come outside. Because he wanted to go in and give the, presumably, he was gonna let some freedom loose there on the FBI, because this is how stochastic terrorism works. Nitwit Nero,
the greatest stochastic terrorist of our time, grunted and barked and hooted about how it was totally unfair, it was uncalled for, it was unprofessional, and it's just more witch hunts. And this, of course, was designed to whip up the maggots into a frothing, foaming, seething mass of violence and hate, because that's what fuels him. I mean, at this point in time, Nitwit Nero is a... he's a character from the original Star Trek. He thrives on hate and fear. And so when he showed up at the FBI office in Cincinnati, making threats, they stopped him. And at some point in time, and this is the most I have right now, the cops eventually reached a standoff with him in a cornfield, and multiple shots were fired. And that's where that's where things stood as of the beginning of the program. See if it's been updated at all. The standoff has ended, according to WLWT-TV. Let's see what. He tried to get into the visitors area of the Cincinnati FBI office, and well, alarms went off. Imagine that. He started with a nail gun. A nail gun. Now let's see if we can get a little more detail out of WLWT. We're going to get an ad first, no matter how important the story itself may be. Okay, yeah, you got a great bank. Good for you.
And that breaking news, a wild chase and shootout that started with a man trying to get into the local FBI office with a gun. Good evening to you. I'm Ashley Kirkland.
And I'm Cherie Pillow. So investigators say this all started with the guy firing a nail gun at law enforcement inside that FBI facility where the visitors come in.
And they've got team news coverage going on here.
As several law enforcement agencies from the federal, state, and local levels are all involved here. Now, again, this all started at the FBI office in Sycamore Township when officials say that suspect tried to get in with a gun. That started then a chase along 71 through Warren County, ending right now in Clinton County.
And we begin with WLWT News 5's Karen Johnson at the media staging area with the latest on the investigation. Karen?
Hey, guys, that's right. I am at the staging area. I am on the other side of I-71 from where this scene is unfolding. I do expect we'll be getting an update very shortly from either the Clinton County Emergency Management Agency or the Ohio State Highway Patrol, because in the last hour or so, there has been a lot of activity, a lot of scanner activity, which I'm not going to report until we have some kind of confirmation. We do know the Dayton Bomb Squad, though, arrived on scene about 2 hours ago. What I can tell you is this did start down in Cincinnati at the FBI field office around 9:15 this morning, and my colleague Brian Hamrick will have more details on those specific details. But there was a man, according to authorities, who tried to break into the field office. That guy took off. He went up 71 into Warren County. Now, at the Warren County, once he was in Warren County, there is a rest stop area. That's when the Ohio State Highway Patrol says they spotted the car, started following the vehicle. police say the suspect then turned around, fired at troopers who were following him, led them into Clinton County. There was a little bit of a pursuit here, eventually at the intersection of State Route 73, 308, around that area is when the suspect got out of the vehicle. There's a cornfield there. Area went on lockdown, and for the last several hours, actually all day, there has been an active standoff. And the last update we got was about an hour and a half ago, saying there was an active standoff. They were telling people in the area to be vigilant. They had eyes on the suspect, but we do know he was armed. But again, in the last hour, we started hearing some activity on the scanners, so we are expecting an update shortly. And as soon as we get an update here at the staging area, we'll make sure to pass it along to you. Reporting live in Clinton County, Karen Johnson, WLWT News 5.
Karen, I know all of this information still coming in. You mentioned there at the very beginning that you are expecting some sort of update. I'm sure people in that area are wanting to be able to get into their homes, get into their businesses, or leave their businesses. Are you getting word that maybe they have this guy in custody or anything like that?
You know, Sheree, what we are hearing is that they were closing in on the suspect. Closing in is the best word to use, but at this point, we don't know if he's in custody. We don't know if more shots were fired. You know, earlier in the day, there was gunfire exchanged when he first got out of his vehicle. But the last update that I heard, they were closing in on him. But again, we hope to get more information because there was a lockdown. There still is a lockdown within a mile radius of where the situation is unfolding. So I can only imagine.
Okay, and now we have further information from the Daily Beast that, yes, in fact, the standoff is over, but they haven't announced whether or not they blew the maggot away or took him into custody and took him to Burger King, or maybe Culver's. I don't know. Sorry. But the Daily Beast says that while the standoff is over, authorities have not said whether the gunman was arrested or killed. The announcement to lift all lockdown recommendations came at 4:25 p.m. from Clinton County Emergency Management. And apparently, several of you noticed the nail gun language. Was he trying to construct an argument? Asks Lee in New York, and Matt in San Francisco says, proving again these folks are not the best or brightest. Their stupidity is the only thing minimizing the body count. We need to stop treating these people with kid gloves, lock them all up so the rest of us can get on with living our lives. Hear, hear. You know, my first inclination was to say, wait a minute, there was a helicopter overhead. Can we not get a drone overhead with maybe one of those precision missiles that just kills the one person they're aiming at, like we used on Ayman al-Zawahiri? No? Okay, well, at least we haven't given the cops those yet, so watch this space. They'll have them, it's probably at some, but no, I'd actually like to hope the guy was taken alive because I would like for him to be interviewed. I would like to know exactly what it was that motivated him to take up a gun, go to the FBI field office, and start shooting. Because it may not necessarily be Nitwit Nero who inspired him. There are others who are saying things to get people worked up. I mean, for God's sakes, Rick Skeletor Scott compared the FBI to Nazis. I'm so old, I can remember when the Republican Party was all about back the blue. And another senator, Roger Marshall, from Kansas. You know, he's a real live, honest-to-God doctor. The Kansas City Star took him to task. Senator Roger Marshall compares the FBI to Nazi police. Whatever happened to back the blue? Socialist Democrats, this is something he said a year ago, Socialist Democrats created this crisis. They defunded the police. They created the anti-police mobs. They turned their back on and, quite frankly, destroyed the integrity of the police. Destroyed the integrity. Interesting how a protest can do that. I didn't realize it worked that way. But that was Roger Marshall a year ago. Now, though, he needs to make sure that he shows the flag and lets the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking freaks who put him in office know that, you know, he is bought and paid for, sold lock, stock, and stinking smoke and barrel to Maggot Nation and their leader, Nitwit Nero. He gave an interview. He said, "These raids and seizures are a fishing expedition and a fascade." No, really, he said fascade. That was a tweet. And in an interview, he said, "You know, friends texted me things like, is the FBI turned into the Gestapo?" Now, if he followed that up by saying, "And I, of course, wrote back and said, no, 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 this is nothing like the Gestapo." The Kansas City Star pointing out, one minute they back the blue, the next minute the FBI is the Nazi secret police. There, of course, was Representative Marginal Trailer Queen, Q-Ball, tweeting in all caps, "Defund the FBI!" As the Kansas City Star said, sounding like a founding member of the Students for a Democratic Society in the 1960s. Yeah, I don't think, no. She probably thinks SDS is a deodorant spray or something. But they've been running around, these maggots have, over the last couple of days, barking and hunting and barking and grunting and hooting and hunting and grooting or whatever about the totalitarian fascist state because, well, he stole a bunch of classified documents and took them home to Mar-a-Lardass, and that's actually a crime. And that's why, finally, Merrick Garland came out and made a statement today. Steve asks, "Have the maggots started blaming Antifa yet?" Helicopter over suspect, Lee in New York says, "Take the suspect out with a gun? You mean like Sarah Palin hunting moose?" Nice comparison. But no, I want a full statement from the guy. I want to know exactly why he picked up a gun. And I don't want to hear any horse shit from his lawyer about how, well, you know, he went a little funny, you know, funny in the head. No, he made a conscious decision. It was probably a rational decision. It was a decision that he reached after having his, if there's a mental aspect to this, after having had his mind preyed upon by the entirety of one of the two major political parties in this country, aided and abetted and amplified, of course, by multimillionaires in the for-profit media, and particularly the right wing thereof. It is the very definition, like I said, of stochastic terrorism. When you do stochastic terrorism, you don't know who the person who takes action is going to be. You're just deliberately putting information out there to get them riled up enough to do something. And as we've noted on this program time after time after time, it's been going on for decades now. Saw a friend of mine post something on Facebook the other day saying, "I wish people could understand that sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will never hurt you." It's not true here in the early years of the third decade of the 21st century. And, of course, the classic is Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer, Tiller the baby killer. Bill O'Reilly, night after night after night after night, until finally someone decided to try to help old Bill O out and murdered Dr. Tiller in church where he was worshiping his God within his faith. So, yeah, words can hurt you. It's reminiscent of the idea that, you know, what you can't see can't hurt you. And, of course, we know here in Appalachia that what you can't see can kill you. Because we've learned hard lessons about, you know, breathing poison. Emilio says, I was just going to say, come on, do you really think it wasn't because of Trump? But yes, it is, because the GQ pedophiles in general are against the FBI just because they're investigating their crimes. Ah, how about that? Thank you, Kim, in New York. Headline, man suspected of trying to breach the FBI's Cincinnati office may have January 6 ties. He's been identified. The guy is Ricky Schiffer, aged 42. And he appears to have, it looks like he was in a video that was posted on Facebook on January 5th, 2021, showing him attending a pro-Trump rally at Black Lives Matter Plaza in D.C. the night before the terrorist attack on the Capitol of January 6th. And in May, a Twitter user named Ricky Schiffer replied to a photograph of rioters scaling the walls of the Capitol on January 6th with a message that claimed he was present at the building and seemed to place the blame for the attack on people other than supporters of former President Donald J. Trump. So there's your answer, Steve in New York.
No, that was all done by the Antifa and the BLM.
This is, of course, exactly what Nitwit Nero and the maggots want. If they can get the Emrys and the Marvelines of the world to believe that somehow or another they're the ones being wronged, it might motivate them a little bit more. And they need motivators. It might motivate the maggots to make sure that they come out and vote. Because they're going to, now that, you know, they've got a problem, because with the Dobbs decision, some of them may not have gotten the message. That they got to keep voting.
Well, we saved the little fetuses, so we can go home now.
So that brings us to Merrick Garland, who held a press conference today to announce that the FBI has taken steps to unseal the search warrant and let America see why it was that the FBI took the action that the FBI took. And it was a good move. Flavio says, props to Garland. Merrick Garland is brilliant. He just called Trump's bluff. Trump's team have until 3 p.m. tomorrow to respond. And Lord only knows what kind of insanity will be pixelated onto electronic pages or, you know, sent to print.
MAGA gerbil borble.
And so if they don't respond, then the FBI releases it. If they do respond and say don't, then there will have to be arguments and the judge will have to render a decision. The redacted property list is part of that warrant application. And like Flavio said, Merrick Garland called his bluff, and Ellie Honig on CNN today said, we essentially saw Merrick Garland call Donald Trump's bluff. So essentially Merrick Garland said, okay, Donald Trump, you're not going to release them. We're going to do it. We're going to put those documents in full in front of the American public. And, you know, then we'll find out that, you know, there have been negotiations taking place, that, in fact, subpoenas were served. And I think this is probably the bottom line here. Subpoenas for the documents were served. And they did what the maggots have done all along with regard to subpoenas. They ignored them. And this time through, the FBI said, no, this isn't a congressional subpoena. This is a subpoena from a court of competent jurisdiction. And we're gonna come and get what we want. It's worth remembering, it was just a week ago that in a hearing with FBI Director Christopher Wray, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, decided to channel his inner Nikita Khrushchev.
Also included on this is a text that I was particularly struck, is the Gonzales battle flag. Come and take it. As indicative of being a violent extremist militia. Well, I will self-report right now that every day in the Senate I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the back of them.
You know, Rafaelito, I don't think that says what you think it says. I mean, sure, it says come and take it and the Gonzales battle flag. But claiming that you wear that terrorist motto on your boots does not make you a good, God-fearing American patriot. It just means you're part of the insurrectionist movement. And, of course, he is. And so he took his cowboy boot off and had him, because he was ready for Chris Wray. And did you hear that thump? He slammed it down. Oh, Lordy, he slammed it down right there and said, we will bury you. No, he didn't say that.
Self-report right now that every day in the Senate I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the back of them. Director Wray, what are y'all doing? This makes no sense. Do you agree with this FBI guidance?
It's the Chewbacca defense.
That the Betsy Ross flag and the Gadsden flag and the Gonzales battle flag are signs of militia violent extremism?
Well, Senator, I'm not familiar with the particular document you have behind you, and I'm not in the practice of trying to comment on documents that I haven't recognized, but I will tell you that when we put out intelligence products, including ones that reference symbols, which we do across a wide variety of contexts, we usually take great pains to put caveats and warnings in the document to make clear that a symbol alone is not considered evidence of violent extremism.
No, it's when taken, and this is Latin, and lawyer types like Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating king of America, would know this, one would presume. It matters taken in pari materia, in material part. So when you see a member of Meal Team 6, and they're walking around, shambling around, galumphing around with their AR-15 Freedom Protector, and they got buttons all over them, their tactical vest, and they got patches of, you know, Molon Labe, Washer Melon, or what did you come and take it, and they got their urine-colored snake flag there. Well, you can taking all of the symbology in pari materia, you can get a pretty good idea of the intent of these malignant freaks. And of course, all of that was going down last week before the search warrant, before the glorious day. And now it kind of makes him look a little more stupid than he looked already. Steve in New York noting, Raffy Cruz, he's clearly just as butch and manly as that Southern Belle Miss Lindsay. Ron in Raleigh says, I wonder, you think that Merrick Garland is going to turn in his Federalist Society membership card and decoder ring? I'm guessing the answer is no. But one of the things that he did say, Ron, was that he was deeply disturbed by the salacious way that members of the FBI and the Department of Justice were being maligned by various and sundry, you know, supporters of Nitwit Nero. Matt in San Francisco says, if the guy only has one pair of boots to wear, he needs to look at his personal budgeting. Yeah, everybody needs a couple of... I want some cowgirl boots. Damn it. Brave Raphael Lee asks, did Cruz proudly flee to Cancun with his boots on? Ha! And since, you know, since they've got the come and take it on the back of the boots. I mean, that forgive me, but that's freighted with a lot of meaning. Several meanings. And since it's on the back of the boots, it's meant to be seen. But that would mean that he'd need to be walking around with his suit pants stuffed in his boots. And I can't keep up with all the symbology anymore. I can't even keep up with the vocabulary, but... Raphaelito, honey, are you on Grindr? Wearing nothing but your boots? Looking over your shoulder, honey? Yeah. Emilio says, MAGA, gurgle, gurgle. You just gave me an idea, Robin. We need to make a Mad Lib-type publication around maggot statements, memes, and their general dumbassery. Come on, Robin, do it. We'll make millions. I'll only take a five per million royalty for the idea. Free horn funding for life. Does Cruz have the Confederate flag on his boots along with the Cancun margarita drink flag? Ha! On the back of the boots. On the back. Yeah. And then, of course, there's also Nitwit Nero's appearance for his deposition in New York before the office of Attorney General Letitia James. The night before, he said,
I'm in New York for a deposition from the racist Attorney General.
Yeah, he wouldn't say that about a white Attorney General. And then, I mean, you know, St. Peter denied Christ three times before the cock crowed. Yesterday, Nitwit Nero took the fifth. He took the fifth 440 times. At one point in time, Nitwit Nero remarked that
the only people who take the fifth are mob bosses. Criminals.
So Newsmuck got on the blower and they called up Alan Dershowitz. And who used to be a great lawyer, but, you know, oh well. Who was a little bit surprised he took the fifth 440 times. Only he didn't take the fifth 440 times. Apparently, after he took the fifth, like once or twice,
same answer.
Go ahead. The Fifth Amendment. I'm surprised that Trump invoked the Fifth Amendment because generally you can give him immunity and then make him talk. And basically, this is a public issue. So I'm not sure. His lawyers may have had a good reason for invoking the Fifth. I don't understand it. In almost 60 years of practice, I never invoked the Fifth Amendment on behalf of my clients, particularly clients, obviously, who have nothing to hide. So it was a surprise to me. Maybe there's a good reason for it, but I don't understand it as an experienced criminal.
Yeah. Many point that testimony could have been used in a criminal suit versus the civil probe that he's going through. Could that be it?
It could be.
It could be, but maybe not.
Flavio says, my mom would always do that. Call my bluff. I could never conceal anything from my mother because she was always one step ahead of me. Seems Merrick Garland has Trump's number. He's figured out Trump's a little kid in a 76-year-old body. P.S. Garland's picture bio appears only once in a Google search on the pages of the Federalist Society with a disclaimer that a person listed as a contributor has spoken or otherwise participated in Federalist Society events, publications, or multimedia presentations. A person's appearance on this list does not imply any other endorsement or relationship between the person and the Federalist Society. In most cases, the biographical information on a person's contributor page is provided directly by the person, and the Federalist Society does not edit or otherwise endorse that information. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. Well, we know that much is a lie. All expressions of opinion by a contributor are those of the contributor. Well, if they take no positions, then how is it that only people in good standing with the Federalist Society wind up being nominated by Republicans for the federal bench? Is that just me? So Alan Dershowitz would not have, but then again, Nitwit Nero probably has, you know, the usual, the horrible, terrible, very bad lawyers. Yeah. And by the way, you know, with me gone yesterday, and Tuesday was a 3-hour filibuster. If you've got anything you want to say about any of these issues, you're welcome to bring them to the conversational table, as it were. The lines are open. The stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And you can reach on Skype Bob Kincaid Horn, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. It's also a Thursday, and that means we have the Green News Report. Check in with Brad and Desi and see what they're up to. And, yeah, maybe we'll get off the schneid and have a fighting chance of keeping this little radio operation on the air and begin working our way down from 1090. And that means, let's see, Thursday, Tuesday, Monday, unfunded. And then $190 of Friday remains unfunded as we're facing a Friday tomorrow. It becomes a bit nerve-wracking. It really, really does.
11-20-22.
In South Korea's capital region, a deluge, turning Seoul's busy streets into rivers.
South Korea, the latest victim of climate-intensified deadly flash floods. Last month, one of the hottest Julys ever recorded.
Tell me about it.
Plus,
protesters gathering outside factories like Heineken and Coca-Cola, demanding they reduce water use and redirect it to citizens.
Mexico declares state of emergency over intensifying persistent drought.
All of that intensification and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Among other things, the bill provides tax credits to boost solar panels, batteries, and other technologies, and also makes it costly to emit methane. Slight hitch on that last one. From now on, you have to pay a $10 toll every time you fart.
Damn it. This is your Green News Report.
Don't worry, there's going to be an easy pass. You're not going to like where it goes.
Okay, Desi Doyen, I thought we passed the climate bill. I thought this was all supposed to be solved by now.
We haven't passed it yet, and no, it is not solved by now.
Damn it.
South Korea this week is the latest country to be hit with record rainfall and deadly flash floods. The capital city of Seoul was deluged with as much as 18 inches of rain in a single day,
wow,
triggering catastrophic flash floods that killed at least 10 people.
Another thousand-year flood They keep coming day after day after day.
The flooding inundated homes, roads, and subways and cut power, forcing hundreds to evacuate. South Korea's president cited climate change in calling for improvements to the country's flood management system.
Good.
But rain is a precious commodity in Europe, now in the grip of one of its worst droughts ever recorded. Barge traffic on waterways is effectively halted in some regions as rivers run dry due to weeks of baking temperatures and scant rainfall, disrupting transport of goods worth $80 billion a year to regional economies. Officials in Britain warn that the country is on the brink of a vegetable shortage because crops have been ravaged by the summer heat wave. In Mexico, much of the northern part of the country is under extreme drought, forcing officials to implement water rationing in major cities and water deliveries by truck.
Just a little preview of what may be coming your way soon.
NBC reports that anger is growing in the region over multinational beverage companies with bottling plants like Coca-Cola and Heineken that are extracting billions of liters of water from public reservoirs. NASA scientist Benjamin Cook confirms that, yes, this is climate change.
Droughts and intense droughts and drying trends are all very consistent with what we expect with climate change.
So these big beverage companies are just taking the public's water, selling it off, and meanwhile, the public doesn't have enough actual water to drink?
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Meanwhile, Europe's climate monitor, Copernicus, announced that July 2022 was the third hottest July globally since record-keeping began in the 1880s.
Only the third?
Only the third. Summer 2022 is likely to rank as one of the three hottest years on record globally and has unleashed deadly extreme weather disasters across the globe. A new study warns global warming is also facilitating the spread of tropical diseases.
Oh, great.
A new study published this week finds that man-made climate change is already worsening the impact of diseases like Zika, malaria, and COVID-19 on human health.
You are nothing but good news today.
In other news, while we await passage in the U.S. House of the Democrats' landmark Inflation Reduction Act, the biggest climate legislation in U.S. history, the New York Times reports on a massive trove of internal documents that have revealed a well-funded, coordinated campaign among Republican state treasurers across the country to use government authority and taxpayer dollars to protect the fossil fuel industry.
Oh, of course.
The state treasurers are coordinating efforts to punish companies seeking to reduce their carbon emissions by shifting away from fossil fuel investments. One example, the Republican treasurer of West Virginia announced that he will retaliate against banks that refuse to finance coal projects by barring them from state government contracts.
Elected officials using the government to go after private companies if they dare take action on climate change.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Wow.
Finally, some good news. A sunken oil rig owned by Taylor Energy off the coast of Louisiana has been spewing oil into the Gulf of Mexico since 2004. Taylor Energy is now liquidating to pay over $400 million in cleanup costs. And in Australia, newly elected Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has set a new, legally binding national target to cut greenhouse gas emissions 43% by 2030. It's Australia's most meaningful climate legislation in decades. Elections have consequences.
Indeed, they do. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And so, well, at almost the halfway mark of the program this evening, we can now report that Nitwit Nero has taken the bait. God, this is he is nothing if not predictable. After Merrick Garland made his statement saying that he plans to unseal the search warrant, Nitwit Nero jumped on his failing his little failing social media platform, Truth Social,
You know, Garland said, among other things, I personally approve the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. The department does not take such a decision lightly. And, of course, you know, we pointed that out when the news of the search broke, that, in fact, it would have to have been approved at the highest levels, meaning Merrick Garland. And so, oh, my God, this is too funny. So today, on his little failing social media site, he said,
I continue to ask what happened to the 33 million pages of documents taken to Chicago by President Obama. The fake news media refuses to talk about that. They want it canceled. Of course, I have a superior mind, I have very good genes, and I caught them with the strawberries.
And of course, he's an idiot. I know we go back and forth on this. You know, is he an idiot? Is he an evil genius? He's an idiot, he's an idiot in a sociopathic sense. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. Isn't curious about what he doesn't know. But knows that his followers out there will gobble up any swill that he puts before them. So yes, as a matter of fact, Barack Obama's team did take documents for the Obama Library. And they did so in conjunction with and cooperation with the National Archives and under the aegis of the Presidential Records Act. According to the Washington Post, once the documents ultimately reached a warehouse in Chicago, the Obama Foundation was then due to pay the National Archives and Record Administration to digitize the documents. The lengthiness of that process aside, the Post continued, there isn't the faintest hint of legal violations. And, of course, even though Nitwit Nero felt like Mike Pencilneck Geek should be hanged, he wanted to make sure that he didn't get too far from Daddy. And so he said he had deep concern. This smells like partisanship. And I guess maybe those were some of those unfounded attacks on the professionalism of the FBI and the Justice Department agents and prosecutors that Merrick Garland was decrying today. Then later on, Nitwit Nero got down to some actual particulars and said,
my attorneys and representatives were cooperating fully and very good relationships had been established, except for the part where we blew off all those subpoenas.
Oh, I added that part.
The government could have had whatever they wanted if we had it. They asked us to put an additional lock on a certain area. Done. Everything was fine, better than most of previous presidents. And then, out of nowhere, and with no warning...
Well, you can thank, Ron Monkey up Duclantis for the no warning part. He had to know.
Mar-a-Lardass was raided at 6:30 in the morning by very large numbers.
And, of course, very is in all caps. Because we wouldn't understand how large the numbers were if he didn't tell us they were
very large numbers of agents and even safe crackers. They got way ahead of themselves. Crazy.
I think they showed up at something like 9 a.m., didn't they? I mean, Nitwit Nero doesn't know because he wasn't there because he was waiting to go to his deposition where he would say,
same answer,
438 times. Yeah.
But what about Obama? Thanks, Obama.
I mean, it goes without saying he's pathetic, isn't he? Yeah, see, we get loaded up like this when I miss one day. And also, you know, also in the gang of maggots
who wanted to make sure that they telegraphed their undying support for Nitwit Nero. Well, there's amateur paleontologist Newton Leroy Gangrene. Because the disgraced former Speaker of the House, who at the same time he was decrying the activities of Bill Clinton, was engaged in an extramarital affair of his own with a much, much younger woman. Newt Gingrich decided to invoke Stalin? Yeah. And this morning when I got up and checked out my filthy morning habit, there was Joe having a conniption.
The Daily Show.
Wow.
Talking about, of course, how these people thought that the FBI should have investigated when classified material was mishandled. Now, some of those same people are making dark, ominous threats, now comparing the FBI to Stalin, now suggesting that this is a banana republic, now saying we have to go to war against the FBI. These people hate law and order.
Yeah.
I thought they were the party of law and order. They don't believe in the rule of law when it applies to the most powerful. I guess it's
very striking.
I guess
mashup.
Now, you know,
of hypocrisy.
There's also another striking mashup. I was just reading Pete Wehner, his Atlantic article. Now they're calling for violence. The quotes in here, Mike Barnicle, are just absolutely unbelievable. I can't even repeat some of what's been said here. But Dinesh D'Souza said the FBI, an organization set up to fight organized crime, has become the most powerful organized crime syndicate in the world. We need to carry the fight against organized crime to its logical conclusion. Shut down the FBI. Prosecute its gang of dangerous criminals. Newt Gingrich suggested the FBI could have planted evidence against Trump, and he said, we'd be better off to think of these people as, well, Newt Gingrich, damn you. You know better. You're saying that Americans should think of the FBI as wolves? Of Christopher Wray as wolves? Of people that you know who protect Americans against criminals, against terrorists? You are taking another cheap shot at law enforcement officers when they don't serve your interest, and saying we'd be better off to think of the FBI as wolves, wolves who want to eat you, wolves who want to dominate you. Newt, you say the FBI has, quote, declared war on the American people? The ugly face up there, Chris Wray? A guy that Donald Trump praised as a man of the highest integrity, who told you about Fox News? Fox News hinting the FBI set up Trump? They declared war on us. And now it's game on again. These are the same people who were panicking on January the 6th. The same people on January 6th who panicked once the violence that they helped cause began, because they followed Donald Trump's lies. And you have Mark Levin, seriously, talking about Hillary Clinton and classified material. And now he says it's a Stalinist hunt. I mean, what? I can't even use the words that are most appropriate there. You have Mike Barnicle. This is a Madisonian democracy. It's something I've talked about for a very long time. We have checks and balances. Donald Trump hated those checks and balances. He hated Madisonian democracy. He hated the fact that judges that judges actually could check his illegal actions, could push back against his breaking of constitutional norms. Here you have two branches. You've got the executive branch and the judicial branch working together. And what did they do? They enacted a legal search warrant. And you have all of these freaks and fools and insurrectionists and people who are trying to cause violence in America, these people who hate law enforcement, these people who are declaring war against the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, because it doesn't serve their political purposes for the moment. They're declaring war and calling Newt. You're calling Christopher Wray a wolf who wants to eat the American. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What a freak you are. What's wrong with Mike Barnicle?
Freak?
Help. Help me here.
Joe.
Help me, Obi-Wan. You're our... yeah. A freak? A freak? Well, we've been saying Newt Gingrich was a freak for a very, very long time here, and once again, so far ahead of the curve, we feel like we're out on, you know, that straight stretch of road through Monument Valley. But he's not wrong. What a freak you are. Well, you know, better late than never, Joe, right? Yeah, overreaction. Jeremy in Vermont says, this always happens. Trump overreacts to try and cover when he fucks up, be it blaming the generals for getting special forces killed in the Horn of Africa a month into my failed presidency. No. Or be it when one of his fuck-ups get caught and he claims he barely knew them, or never knew them, period. Justice is coming, Nitwit Nero. Justice is coming. And I think it was George Conway who said, the walls are closing in. Newt Gingrich is sane? Asks Emilio. What you talking about, Wilson? I mean, Joe. True. And we do have some other stuff for this Thorn in the Side Thursday that I had hoped to get to, and I looks like, yeah, no time like the present. Apparently, you know, it's been a rough time for the cue balls. I mean, among other things, Q, who never existed, seems to have disappeared. Marginal trailer queen, cue ball, has kind of moved on. And now she's more worried than she was before because, and I didn't realize it, but apparently there's a Marginal Trailer Queen show out there. She does a regular gig. She gets it, she turns the camera on and starts babbling. In fact, I think there's a dark money media operation in D.C. whose studios she uses, maybe some of the other high-profile maggots, you know, the really, really ones use it too. And upon the reports that came out that somebody had to be talking to the FBI inside Mar-a-Lardass, well, that really upset Marginal Trailer Queen. It bothered her a lot. Because that meant that, again, somebody was talking. And so she said, we now know that there was an FBI informant at Mar-a-Lago. Who is that? And how many other FBI informants are around President Trump on a daily basis? working at his clubs, working at Mar-a-Lardass or maybe Bed Monster, or on his staff. These are the things I want to know, because they're traitors. They're traitors, and they're helping the deep state. These are the enemies within. These are the real enemies, and they are there to purposely create something against President Trump that is not there. And they had to make sure they found something against President Trump, because if they come up empty-handed, then they know they're going to jail. Huh? That is why it's the most dangerous time for President Trump and his family and anyone in its orbit, me included, because these... See, that's the... That there, right there, there's the central concern. Because these people stop at nothing. They don't want a second President Trump term. Here's why. Because he is dead serious, and he knows who his enemies are, and he's going to finish the job he started in his first 4 years. Oh, really? He's going to have a Stalinist witch hunt purge? Is that really? Okay. But she doesn't know what they know. And she's been to Mar-a-Lardass. And she was in the meeting with Nitwit Nero before she was even sworn into Congress. It's getting a little sweaty for her. And she said he's got a list and he's checking it twice.
No matter which way the pendulum swings, to Democrats or Republicans, those unelected bureaucrats are the ones that are you should be the most afraid of, because they never leave. They never, ever leave. And those are the people that knew President Trump was going to get rid of them, because he said it and he meant it. Now, his first 4 years, John, he walked into Washington not knowing who was good and bad, not knowing who his friends were and who his enemies were. But he knows now. He knows now, and so do all of us. And we are committed to the next 4 years of his presidency of taking out the enemies in Washington. These are the enemies within. They're the enemies of the American people.
Ah. So what she did there is, and I don't know if anybody's ever explained to her something about, you know, admissions of party opponents, statements against interest. She just invented that she's involved in a conspiracy to create an enemies list and take them out. Now, what do you suppose Marginal Trailer Queen means when she says she wants to take people out? This is a woman who is routinely photographed with a weapon of war in her hands. She thinks that the terrorists who attacked the Capitol on January 6th are political prisoners. But they've got a list, and she's helped make it, and she knows who it is.
They're the enemies of our freedom, the enemies of our Constitution, and they know he's serious, and he's got the list, and it's going to happen. And so this is all about stopping him from being president again. They're trying to disqualify him from ever being able to hold office again.
See, it's kind of a shame, because way back, you know, before he got thrown off Twitter or anything, every now and then he'd put out some burbling word salad, and I would respond from time to time, and I'd say, listen, buddy, not a fan or anything, but you need to understand, you can't trust anyone. Everybody knows you'll roll on them, and if it gets hot, they'll roll on you first, pal. That's the world you've created. That's the world you lived in. I think at some point in time I said, you know, you can't trust Iwanka. You can't trust Jared. You can't trust Eric. You can't trust Trader Tot. You can't trust Melanoma. Because they all know who you are. And they'll drop the dime first. Over on my Facebook page, I saw a graphic, a meme, that made me giggle wildly just before airtime.
Joseph Mark Glasner's original Not News satire headline, Melania admits, I call FBI. Fears being buried in golf course. I call FBI. I not want to be buried on the golf course. Or pushed downstairs. Mm-hmm. But, so, you know, the marginal trailer queens in the world, they're getting nervous too. The walls are closing in. It's getting a little close around them. Yeah, Ralphs points out, marginal trailer queen, Trump has a list and he's checking it twice. And Jeremy said, no, maggot, you spell the list checker's name as Satan, not Santa. But, like I said, it's, you know, it's been rough for cue balls like her and you know, the rank and file of the cue balls over the last 18 months or so. Saw an article at Vice. The cue balls did some hopping up and down and poo-flinging, you know, joyful, happy poo-flinging this week. Because Nitwit Nero posted basically a 2024 campaign ad. And you know, the cue balls and the maggots are the fascist right-wing equivalent of people who play record albums backwards. And in this ad, they heard something. The music in the ad was by a guy named Richard Feelgood. Really? Dick Feelgood? And the name of the song is WW1WGA. And that's the motto of the cue balls. Where we go one, we go all. And so over on Telegram, a cue ball wrote, and they've got, you know, these people have reach. On Telegram, this idiot has 200,000 followers. But he wrote, I don't know who needs to hear this, but the song playing behind Trump and Scavino's storm video is literally called WWG1WGA. If that's not a cue proof, then I don't know what is. Boom. Well, okay. But, see, that's not what the song is. Instead, someone from the Maggot organization, in particular, Maggot spokescreep Taylor Buddha Witch, said it's actually a song called Mirrors by a TV and film composer by the name of Will Van de Cromert. That guy has composed music for Saturday Night Live and the 2016 Rio Olympics and so forth. It's one of those grim, creepy things that that Nitwit Nero puts out. You know, we are a nation in decline. That kind of crap. And there's sound effects in the background of, like, thunderstorms and rain. Because they use storm imagery over at Cue Ball Central. The storm is coming. Interestingly, the songs are identical. WWG1WGA. And the music by Van de Cromert. David Dominique, a former professor at William & Mary College in Virginia, interviewed by Vice News, said,
I've listened to both closely several times now, and I have 100% professional confidence these recordings are identical. Not even a reinterpretation of a composition, but the same recording. Media Matters analyzed it and came to the same conclusion. And so basically, Richard Feelgood appears to have stolen the music from Vanda Cromert. Vanda Cromert put the music on his SoundCloud in 2019 before Richard Feelgood posted his song WWG1WGA to Spotify. Yeah, this is apparent. I can't even imagine what it would do to your brain to listen to this, but this Richard Feelgood album is apparently a cue ball concept album. Silver Cloud 5. Don't go looking for it. There's a track on it called Q Sent Me. Another track called Antifa Assholes. Then there's Adrenochrome Shit. Adrenochrome is a set is that the cue balls think that that's a component of infant blood, which the elites drink to preserve their youth. And, of course, over on Telegram, another cue ball said, "Holy smokes, what an amazing confirmation. Looks like I have a new favorite song." So the cue balls now think, because that music was used, that somehow or another Nitwit Nero is still secretly president of the United States, and they're terribly, terribly excited. There's just one problem. If that's the case, then the gas prices are his fault. And so's all the inflation. Right? I mean, that's how they get... Right? Sure. Mm-hmm. It becomes mind-numbing. After a little while, it really, really does. And then there's the business of Nitwit Nero saying that the FBI planted backpacks full of stuff in my house. Please, please, sweet fake baby Jesus. Give us some relief from this troublesome asshole. But people are beginning to pump the information out there, and the paranoia is kicking in. George Conway, like I mentioned, said the walls are closing in, and. Interviewed on MSNBC, well, they brought in Barbara McQuaid, an expert, on Morning Joe, because... The conventional understanding, and if the warrant comes out, we might know a little bit more, or else it'll be redacted. They'll protect their source. The background information, the probable cause for the search warrant was provided by a confidential human informant. And this has triggered a massive amount of... paranoia. Barbara McQuaid adding, and I think this is what this works, but it boils down to. Folks are stoking the stroke. You remember that motto, stoke the stroke? Barbara McQuaid saying, he needs to watch his back.
Some of his buddies could be wearing a wire, which will reduce him to the mob status that he has always occupied. Everybody will have to be patted down now to make sure they're not wearing a wire. And Barbara McQuaid is a former U.S. attorney, so she probably knows a little bit about, you know, the process. Again, a little chat from my filthy morning habit.
Of where this all came from on the inside. Two senior government officials told the magazine the search was largely based on information from an informant.
An informant
who
on
told
the
FBI what documents Trump was hiding and where they were located. Trump World is now reportedly trying to figure out who flipped. According to Rolling Stone, quote, Donald Trump is worried that he may have a rat or multiple rats in his midst. He's wondering if his phones are tapped or even if his buddies could be wearing a wire. And Barbara, I would think that's a very good thing to be concerned about.
Yeah, absolutely. If this is an ongoing investigation, as it appears to be, then it would be appropriate to continue to collect evidence. And so the ways that those are done are through listening devices, surveillance techniques, confidential informants, consensual monitoring, and other things. But one thing that's really important to remember to use all of those techniques requires court oversight. So they're not planting bugs on their own. They're not tapping his phones without great scrutiny by a court. And so just as we saw for this search, it required a court to review and determine whether there was probable cause to believe that a crime had been committed and that evidence of that crime would be found on the scene. To engage in any of those other investigative techniques would also require court oversight. So I'm sure that Merrick Garland is doing this by the book. He has told us so. By all appearances, he's doing so. But I think you're right in that if we know that there is an informant who shared this information, which is not surprising. It is often the way that the government learns about misconduct in cases, is that someone who's close to the wrongdoer shares that information. But I think Donald Trump does need to watch his back, because it sounds like the rats are fleeing the ship.
Yeah, and of course, in a bitter irony, Charles, Donald Trump actually strengthened the law that he may be charged under regarding the mishandling of classified information. Again, it's all a perfect circle. Here he is. He's screaming and yelling and bellowing about mobsters who take the Fifth Amendment because he's trying to attack Hillary Clinton's people. Not Hillary Clinton, but Hillary Clinton's people. And then he pleads the Fifth hundreds of times. He, of course, you know, has everybody getting up, chanting, lock her up. And my gosh, has any president had as many people indicted as this guy?
You know, really, stoke the stroke. That's what they're doing. The pressure is mounting on him. And then again, I don't know enough about sociopaths. I don't know what happens when you apply heat and pressure to sociopaths. I don't. Are they simply immune to it? Because what would it be like if every single person he looks at, he wonders if they're the one? I mean, it would be great if he could see that satire poster. I call FBI. I not want be buried in golf course. At what point in time does he realize he can't trust anyone? And what kind of a Dante-esque hell must that be? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not exhibiting sympathy for him, y'all, by no means. Oh no. We reference Captain Queeg and the Kane Mutiny and the paranoia that grows day by day by day by day. Has he already cracked? You know, we thought for years that he had already cracked during his presidency. But somehow or another, he's managed not to run naked out onto the lawn of Mar-a-Lardass? Does he just think that he will get away with it because he's, you know, he's Rollo Tomasi, he's the guy who always gets away with it? Do you think he will get away with it? I mean, the number of lawsuits against him, the number of investigations. I mean, the January 6th thing, the Georgia trying to dummy up the Georgia election results thing. The documents in Mar-a-Lardass. The Trump Organization case that he was not testifying about, in New York. The January 6th Commission. On and on and on. At what point in time does he begin to crumble? Or does it just not matter? I mean, we know the creature got to the point where he was throwing food in the White House dining room, yanking tablecloths off tables, throwing tantrums, ketchup on the walls. He can't be any better now than he was then. I mean, it creates a certain amount of curiosity. What must it be like for the people, the loyal maggots down there working for him at Mar-a-Lardass? It has to be surreal. It has to be something that even the mind of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson, peace be upon him, couldn't come up in his his wildest LSD fueled fantasies. Oh, and by the way, the guy who tried to get into the Cincinnati FBI office, if it was being described by Jesse Lee Peterson, he would say, he did. He refused to surrender. He was wearing body armor, and, well, when there's one of you and a whole bunch of cops, you're going to lose. So we'll never know exactly why it was he went to the FBI. Trying to shoot up the place. Rick Schiffler. Insurrectionist. Sic semper insurrectionis. I'm just making the Latin up as I go along at this point. So here we are, 2 hour Philip Robster. Still at Goose Egg, still at 10.90 to go in fundraising. If we could take that down a little bit, it would be huge. Oranges Inferno, Stephen, New York, says, you may have referenced this. If not, please check it when you can, because the Lincoln Project is seriously trying to get inside of his head and push him over the edge. Well, this looks like something I don't want to miss. And will there be an ad? No. Come on.
Who was it, Donald? Who gave you up to the feds?
Who squealed?
Who told them what you kept in a safe at Mar-a-Lago? No, not that stuff.
Disgusting.
The classified documents. 15 boxes of top secret files.
That's naughty, Donald.
And illegal.
You broke the law.
No wonder the Department of Justice and the FBI came knocking.
They're coming for you.
But who leaked? Who sold you out? Was it Jared?
Ungrateful.
Ivanka?
Backing away from you.
Don Jr.?
Your own son.
Eric?
Do you even care?
Melania?
She wants to escape.
Mark Meadows?
Who did it?
All your old Washington friends are talking to the 1-6 committee and the grand jury.
They weren't your friends.
Maybe it was someone closer.
Who could it be?
Someone you trust and
betrayed.
Now you're the first president to have his home raided by the FBI.
This is your legacy.
It's bad, Donald.
Your father would be ashamed.
And there's no one you can trust.
No one.
No one at all.
There never was.
God, it's almost like they've been digging through my Twitter feed. You can't trust anyone, Donald. They're not really your friends. Yeah, they are. You're right, Steve. They're doing their damnedest. Well, here at the as we move into the third hour of the program, let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
On the advice of my bartender, I'm drinking the fifth 440 times. How you doing, Robin?
Yeah, I'm drinking the fifth.
Now, remember, Dave, he doesn't drink.
Lips that touch liquor will never touch mine.
Your lips?
No, my liquor.
Yeah. Well, see, he drinks it a little differently than most. He sits on the bottle and then does headstands.
Well, I was about to say, he's friends with a Supreme Court justice who's into boofing.
I don't even know what that is.
What you just said. Oh, I got it wrong. Hang on. Correction. I'm sorry. I saw Steve, and I got it wrong. Steve from Georgistan, Brother Bishop Steve. Steve! I'm so sorry. Yeah, Steve from Georgistan. I was so excited to get to the link. I just didn't get past. But Steve, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Yes, all the credit. Absolutely. I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
The goddess of irony being a good goddess, I mean, she's been working overtime this week. To take time out of her busy schedule to not only deal with traitors and scumbags like the Trumps, but in my own family, among the maggots. Yes, one of Dave's episodes of Life Among the Maggots.
Yes.
My father, the 77-year-old retired cable splicer, was taking some branches off of a tree over the weekend, and he fell off a shed roof, shattering his hip and part of his leg. And I didn't know because I had lost my phone on the day before. And my brother came to the door Sunday afternoon and said, "Dad's on his way to the hospital here in Indianapolis." Why? He tells me the story. And being a cable splicer's kid, my first question was he tied off? Where was his safety equipment? Well, he was wearing his hard hat, but he was not tied off. Now, you would think a man who'd spent more than 20 years as a cable splicer would know damn good and well that regardless of how high up you are, you tie off. Not this man. No.
No.
But here's where the goddess of irony inserts her loving hand. Now, you know about my sister, my little sister Jennifer.
Yes.
She is a nurse in a nursing facility. And the original nursing facility my dad wanted to go to was full. They didn't have a bed space for him. So my little sister, being a good person, found him a bed in her facility. And she's a night nurse. which means she may very well be taking care of her own father, and he doesn't even know her.
Oh, how sad.
He's never met her. The reason I know she's my sister, my grandmother, my dad's mother, saw her when she was 3 years old and wrote a note saying that she knows that Jennifer is dad's daughter. But she kept that secret until we found out 2 years ago. And my grandmother's been dead for almost two decades. So, and my sister has a 9-year-old daughter. I've seen pictures. I've even chatted with her online briefly. We were going to meet before COVID hit, and then all that hit. And it's just been her work, her health, and she's been going back and forth with my sister Kathy about whether she wants to meet Dad. Well, evidently, she wants to meet him. Now the question becomes, does she want to let him know who she is?
Oh, that's a much bigger question.
But yes, and you know how I go through these mental exercises. The greatest irony would be if she looked over Bob and I and said, can you boys play the big brother and ask him what his intentions are? Because he's flirting with me. But I don't think it's going to play out like that. That's just for my own entertainment. I know. I can imagine my sister, because I mentioned this when we were talking about where to send Dad. I said, he'll probably flirt with her. And my sister said, well, maybe not if he recognizes certain family traits. And the next line she said, but you're probably right. He probably will. Because my dad has cataracts and he's half blind in the other eye. And he still wants to go to Alaska, go back to Alaska and drive around and risk his neck there. So, yeah. And this guy voted for Trump twice. Doesn't that just make you feel all warm and cuddly inside, Robin? I mean, this is the kind of mental issues that Donnie's followers have. And by the way, Beto O'Rourke, I love you. Anytime you want to call any of my maggot family members and say, motherfucker, this ain't funny to us, please feel free. I will be more than happy. But I mean, I used to live in Houston, so I understand the attitude. But giggling at the idea of, you know, 21 people losing their life at the hands of a guy who's never had that kind of a weapon. Just makes my skin crawl.
It's nauseating. How morally dead, how ethically bankrupt does one have to be to giggle where that person with their goddamn Greg Abbott sign giggled?
Well, and Greg Abbott's no winner of prizes in his handling of the situation. As I recall, the moment Talks and Prayers was put out, he went to a political fundraiser for his campaign.
Absolutely.
He didn't have the decency to say, you know, because of this tragedy, I'm canceling all campaign events until, you know, the day after it happened. You know, take a full day. And
well, I have a question, kind of off topic, but still on topic. So we know now that the guy who wanted to shoot up the FBI office in Cincinnati was present on January 6th. He was one of the terrorists and an insurrectionist. And he wanted to go in and shoot up the Cincinnati field office. But it turned out the FBI was a little bit more ready for a terrorist attack than maybe he expected them to be. And so does this fall within the general heading of what I've been saying for so long? Y'all, they're going to do it again? Because he did it again. He engaged in a second seditious attack on a federal installation. This is y'all, they're going to do it again, isn't it?
No, because I think you need to look at the way treason is described in the Constitution. He took up arms and violently attacked the United States government when he attacked that field office. The FBI agents represent all of us as residents and citizens of the United States. They're sworn to catch people who are breaking the law. Oh, and by the way, from what I understand about the so-called raid on Mar-a-Lardass, Trump's chief counsel was there. The FBI was there unarmed, in khakis and polo shirts. The only people that were armed were the Secret Service, and they were gunned up to the gills, which you would expect if you're guarding a former president. Okay. But they called his chief counsel. Chief counsel was at Mar-a-Lardass when the FBI arrived with the Ryder truck, and they followed all the protocols that were necessary to do the search. And as far as planting evidence, there's probably enough surveillance equipment at Mar-a-Lardass to film for years. So, and from just about every conceivable angle you could think of. So this idea that they snuck shit in, that's a pipe dream.
Absolutely.
And I wouldn't doubt if it was, if not Ivanka, it was malignancy. That is their human resource.
But my you mean melanoma?
Yes. And she doesn't have to worry about being buried out in the buried out in the golf course because she is undead and has to get out of the coffin every night. So they're not going to bury her. So she doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah, at least not without one of those garlic braids.
Well, yeah, or, you know, but just don't go out to a steakhouse with it, honey. I mean, that's my only advice. If the hubby asks you out to take you out for a steak, just say no. But it makes more sense for it to be a family member to be the resource. Because I don't think he's got anybody from his White House days that's close enough to him that he let know where that
Stephen Miller?
Is. I don't know if he'd let Stephen Miller even know because of Stephen Miller's proposed religious beliefs. We all know that Donald Trump is a big anti-Semite, unless he's trolling for dollars. I mean, this guy once infamously said that he didn't want anybody touching his money that didn't have a yarmulke. I mean, and the maggots, you know, obviously they can't read, because if their assertion that Donald Trump is still president is true, then he's prohibited from running in 2024.
Well, hold on there. What about, I mean, how many times did Lyndon LaRouche run for president from prison?
500 or 600 times.
I mean, I was thinking about that the other day.
I think he ran more often than Pat Paulson. Pat was always running. The funny thing is, Pat Paulson started out as a joke, and if you read his positions, you'd swear he was running for the Republican nomination.
You know, one of those quirky presidential campaigns I will remember, there was a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox, Bill Spaceman Lee. And I forget when but he said, my platform is I'm opposed to guns and butter. They'll both kill you. I don't know why that stuck in my head, but, you know, just trying to play some...
I vote for him.
Just trying to game some of this out. This becomes...
I'd say it's a family member.
Yeah, I kind of wonder. Or, you know, who's that nerdy, moon-faced young dude, last name, not Stephen Miller, he's one of the spokes creeps. I don't know. But I thought his name was Miller too.
Was it the guy that dressed up like the Easter Bunny?
Oh no 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 that's the first White House spokes creep. I want to kind of game this out for a second, Dave, because I find this very interesting. Talking to Alex Jones, Steve Bannon, racist Bannon, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, said, I don't think it's beyond this administrative state and their deep state apparatus to actually try to work on the assassination of President Trump. And then that got legs because Nitwit Nero's pal Bernie Carrick said, I'm going to tell you something.
God, that piece of shit.
Well, but you know, yeah, we can dismiss him as such, but I think we have to take this into consideration. He said, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not into conspiracies. I'm not into anti-government rhetoric. And then, of course, he doubled down, got all dark, and said, this is the first time in my lifetime that I would say I am deathly afraid for Donald Trump. I would not put assassination beyond these people. Actually, he said behind these people. So they set up, Dave, a self-fulfilling prophecy. Now, if dipshit does have a stroke, they will claim that the deep state did it to him. If he has a big old coronary and tumbles over, well, it'll be the Illuminati or the Democrat elites or the adrenochrome drinkers and they gave him the heart attack pill. Or maybe it'll be a polonium tipped umbrella. But the point is, the maggots are in this mindset, and no amount of reason, no amount of rationality, no amount of reality is going to sway them. Q will tell, I mean,
And you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not wishing. I'm not hoping. Not at all. I don't do that. It is violative of my personal ethos. But he is old. He's in horrible shape. Hell, there was one picture of him on that Bed Monster golf course a week or so ago, where he was lifting one heel and it looked like he was shitting his Depends. And we have actual remember we have testimony going all the way back to the Apprentice from Noel Kasler, who said that he has suffered Nitwit Nero suffered from incontinence for years because of his abuse of things that are close akin to or might even be crank, or maybe something as prosaic as, you know, metformin for diabetes, which can mess with your guts.
Yeah, I'm aware of metformin and its shitty reputation firsthand. Yeah.
Okay. let's keep it easy on the dinner hour in the Mountain Daylight time zone.
Sorry, Bill. But no, I didn't mean to bring it up.
But we've got Noel Kasler talking about that from like 2007. So there are plenty of indications that he's not a well man. I mean, photographs of him lately. Robin. I mean, when I first transitioned, I went through that awkward phase that everyone goes through when they start using cosmetics, where you tend to lay it on with a towel.
I was
gently pulled back from the brink, and I'm learning to use a little bit more of a light hand. But the pictures of him now, he must be grayer than Gandalf's beard, because they're laying that orange shit on, layers at a time. And so what the whole point of this little digression, given the things that people are saying now, let's see, Monica Crowley, she's a wing nut. She worked in the Maggot administration. She jumped on Twitter and said, "This is it. This is the hill to die on." And then there was Mark Levin. "This is the worst attack on this republic in modern history, period. This is a Stalinist hunt." Seb Gorka said it was the search warrant was a declaration of war. You know, he's a Nazi. You referenced earlier over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Jesse Waters said, "How do we know they're not planting evidence right now? I'm angry. I feel violated. The whole country feels violated. It's disgusting. They've declared war on us, and now it's game on." You got to wonder if Ricky Schiffer there in Cincinnati may have caught that, and well, I mean, if it's war, then it's time to get our little AR-15s to blah, 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 bang, 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 bang.
I think about 100 or 150 of us ought to call Marjorie Taylor Greene's office in the morning and ask their rep there that answers the phone, "How do you get on misrepresenting Green's enemies list?" I'd like to be put up there at the top of the list. That way I know y'all are coming. So, I mean, the Republican Party has for decades, from the 1960s on, embraced crazy. They embraced crazy with the John Birch Society, with the immoral minority, and Jerry Jr.'s papa. I don't want to even think what his kinks were. But these hypocrites who are making a great dollar at it, because the dollar is God's measure of how much he loves you. So the little old ladies are eating cat food while the TV preachers are riding around in Rolls Royces. I mean, it makes, but the Republicans love them because they're a success. Now, that's kind of a twisted up idea of success. But when a guy who's declared bankruptcy as often as Donald Trump has, you would think the federal courts would look over and go, Mr. Trump, we're here again. What in the hell? You know, after about the third time, I'm surprised the bankruptcy court didn't look over and go, ah, no. Robin?
No, I'm listening. I'm in complete agreement.
Oh, okay. I mean,
yeah. That. Oh, yeah. Spicy. And, the spokes creep you were referencing. The furry. Spicy. Sean Spicy. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa.
Yeah. But
is it Brian Miller?
This is somebody.
I don't know. He's some little porcine creep. Not fat shaming. Down at Mar-a-Lardass that was doing spokes creep stuff for him, you know, after he, you know, left in shame and fury. But no, who's rolled on him? But the larger point I was trying to reach, talking about what all these people are saying out there, Dave, is that whatever happens, they're looking for a reason to go nuts. I'm trying to see here. Let's see. It certainly feels like they're treating this as a hot civil war. When this is all said and done, the people responsible for these tyrannical actions need to be hanged. Mike Caputo, a maggot, said, with this militant raid on President Trump's home, we have become Russia. The FBI is the KGB. Over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, Dan Bongino said, this is some third world bullshit. And they said, and there was another asshole saying, we don't need a civil war. We need a revolution. We outnumber them 10-1.
Bullshit on that, too.
Clanny Oakley chimed in, Dave. Clanny Oakley chimed in. This is Gestapo crap, and it will not stand. They can't decide if it's fascism or communism because Marginal Trailer Queen said, this is the rogue behavior of communist countries, not the United States of America. These are the type of things that happen in countries during civil war.
And she's going to declare it, by God. Or by Don, either one for her.
You remember Elise Stupidnik, New York congresswoman? Doesn't even live in her own district.
Yeah.
Joe Biden's FBI and Department of Justice have been fully weaponized against their political opponents. It's an absolute outrageous abuse of power and un-American.
Chris Ray was appointed by Trump.
Yeah, I know. Then there was Kevers McCarthy, who said, it's an intolerable state of weaponized politicization. As to Elise Stupidnik, she, of course, her name was one of the names that was legible at the bottom of the toilet. Oops. So that was something Nitwit Nero didn't want anybody to see. Maybe it was a list of, okay, like, these are the hot, these are the hots and the not hots in Congress, and, like, Marjorie and Lauren, they're, like, totally hots. They're, like, sevens, eights.
Elise Stupidnik. She's a total 2.2.
Sir, you might not want to put that in writing, sir.
Yeah, okay, wait a minute. I'll tear this up and put this in the toilet.
You know, the thing is, Robin, the problem that I see a lot of Democrats having is they still think this is the Republican Party from the 1970s, where there were some of them that you could reason with. You know, guys like Dick Lugar and all of that.
Howie Baker, even Barry Goldwater.
Those days are long gone. Yeah, Barry Goldwater, who nobody would ever in their wildest dreams ever call that man a communist. And if they did it to his face, he'd probably attack him. But the Republican Party has embraced this kind of crazy for decades, for generations. I mean, everybody points to Eisenhower and says, well, both Republicans and Democrats wanted him to be their standard bearer, which is true.
But he was not. However, no. You will not catch this suspiciously large woman praising Eisenhower. I know about the race baiting.
I know about the red baiting. I'm not praising him. This is the same guy who authorized Operation Wetback. And sent several U.S. citizens of Hispanic descent across the Mexican border in deportation as a political stunt.
Well, yeah, and when do you think, I mean, if you consider the Bay of Pigs, when do you think that first got going? You know, Eisenhower left office on January the 20th, 1961. So.
Yeah. And then they blame Kennedy for the failure.
The coup against Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh was cleared by Eisenhower. Not Truman, Eisenhower. Because his pal Winston Churchill had been barking and grunting for it for years, and Truman wouldn't have any of it. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's not long after that. It's early in the 1960s that Richard Hofstadter gives us the essay, The Paranoid Style in American Politics. And that damn thing has remained evergreen. I've mentioned it a million times. Dr. Bill used to talk about it a lot. It's required reading to understand the right wing then, the right wing now, because it's the same right wing, Dave. I keep trying to hammer home this idea that we make a horrible mistake when we think that all of this crap is just stuff that started happening after he came down that fool's gold staircase. It isn't.
Oh, you mean to the paid crowd? To the crowd of
well, yes.
That they
yeah.
paid?
Yeah. You know, the crisis actors.
Yeah. Something like $350 a piece is what they were getting. I think they got screwed. I don't think they'll be listing that on their their resumes when they go to apply for a union job in some other theater.
Well, job's a job. Yeah.
I mean, remember the Pineapple Prince was a member of SAG-AFTRA.
True, he was. As a matter of fact, I think he was the president of SAG for a while.
Oh, no, I will not believe that.
I think he was during the HUAC hearings, because that's where he made his first.
Not Limbaugh.
Not Limbaugh. We're talking.
I said the Pineapple Prince was a member of SAG-AFTRA. By that, I meant Limbaugh.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking about old 666 himself, the crazy-headed B-movie actor Ronald Wilson Reagan.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're both receiving pineapples. The mistake is the honest one, Robin. I mean, you've got your Reagan juice bar aficionados, and then you got your Limbaugh juice bar aficionados. Of course, Limbaugh's is a lot wider and has more capacity. So I'm told. Oh, and news from the shop.
Oh yeah, tell me.
There's been so much rain around the world that I had a meeting with the union reps, and we've decided as a company to halt our construction of any more crosses. We're looking for land to build arcs on now. You can get a family-sized arc, or you know, get one for your whole town. So you can ride out all this mess in comfort. We don't supply food, water, or waste disposal, although, you know, there are buckets and there are sides to this these vessels. But they are roomy, and you can bring your whole family, if you can stand them, and just float around and pretend it doesn't exist. I think that's a fine expansion on the usual Crazy Dave's stuff. I mean, we're always trying to innovate here. And it will be good for the local economy. I mean, after all, Ken Ham built an ark out in the middle of Kentucky. So
good a place.
Why not?
Yeah, you got to wonder, you know, it's a little too far west, but with all the flooding Kentucky had recently, does that fucker float? No.
Yes, it does.
It does?
Actually, it does. When it was first installed, there was a flood in the area, and the flood was so bad, it actually took the ark off its foundations, and it floated. Briefly. Oh, yes. And that little boondoggle cost the good people of the Commonwealth a great deal of money in subsidies. Tax breaks.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. By the way, you got an ew, Dave, yuck, from Ralph's. So, you know, just be careful whose evening snacks you're ruining.
With Big Brother?
So, you know, just...
Well, why am I getting an ooh? Is it the...
Well, don't revisit... Dave, don't revisit it. You already got an ooh yuck. Let it just float by, as it were. So,
all right, for Ralphs, I'll do it.
But,
I apologize, Ralphs.
But I'm looking, you know, I'm looking at all of this, and the Schadenfreude is unavoidable, but we need to be a little bit sober sides about this, because these fuckers are dangerous, and they're more dangerous when they feel cornered. But the fact of the matter is, apparently Nitwit Nero just got to the
find out phase of fuck around and find out with Merrick Garland. And one other thing, you know, a central point of all of this paranoia is that the Biden administration is coming after Trump. No. The way that the Department of Justice is supposed to work is that it is the one cabinet-level agency that operates largely without interference from the White House. The White House, in the way it's supposed to work, the White House does not tell the Department of Justice who to go after. Okay? Now, Nitwit Nero ran it differently. You know, he expected Bill Barr, the prosecution, to just say that the election was stolen and let Nitwit Nero keep on being president. And he, in doing so, he
Barr
found...
Barr wanted to keep his law license.
Right. He found the terminus of Barr's unflagging loyalty. He had already done everything he could, including tanking in the Mueller report. But, you know, he wanted to use the Department of Justice as his personal weapon. But in the system as it is supposed to operate, the Attorney General doesn't go and say, "Mother, may I," to the President of the United States. The Attorney General makes the decision and the President lives with it. So it's worth keeping that in mind when we hear these idiots talking about how Joe Biden done told Merrick Garland to blah, blah, Merrick Garland, yada, yada, yada. No, he didn't. That, in any other presidency, that is the height of impropriety.
I've heard Garland speak several times. And he reminds me of a 2x4 in some is rather stiff manner, but his argument today was probably the most efficient use of words I've heard out of him in the whole time he's been AG. But it will not make it to one ear with the maggots, especially on Fox, because if that happens, then the January 6th commission and all the rest of it is going to pile on, and Donnie's going to have his stroke, and then you're going to see violence break out. More violence, I should say. Because they're continuing to do it. They have never stopped. That's what I was going to take issue with you about them doing it again. They're still doing it. Right out there in the open where God and everybody can see them.
That's a fair point.
Just daring you to tell them no. Hell, my own brother on the 4th of July told me, "We've got the right to remove those politicians and punish them." Robin, when I hear a trained combat officer say that, it says one thing.
It gives you the chills, doesn't it?
We're going to capture them and we're going to kill them. We're going to capture them and we're going to kill them. And is out? Well, I never said that. They are still doing it, folks. And it's not going to end until we put several of them under the prison and let them serve nice long sentences.
Preferably not in a federal country club.
Well, I've always wondered, if Donald Trump were convicted, let's say, in the next year or two, we both know how long criminal cases can take. It can take 2, 3, 4 years before he ever sees the inside of a courtroom. Does he still get his Secret Service protection if he's found guilty and sent to prison?
That I do not know.
Or will they put him on home detention at Mar-a-Lago, where the Secret Service would, at least until 10 years?
Well, okay. Hold on, because there's another twist here. He behaves like a mob boss because, you know, that's what he has always aspired to be. He likes the extrajudiciality of the mob. And so if the heat gets up enough, look for him to have a stroke. And by that, I mean one of those mob strokes where they bring him in into court in a wheelchair with a plaid blanket over his lap and his head lolling over and his tongue hanging out and drool and a little drool bib on him and he won't be able to remember anything or say anything because, you know, he's sick. And then two or three days later, there'll be like surveillance video of him walking around Mar-a-Lardass. Because that's who he is. Yes, in answer to your question, Shorty in L.A., this program is live. It's been live since, 2 hours and 48 and a half minutes ago. So, yeah, it's live. And I will go ahead and mention, because we're rapidly running out of time in the program, that this is another Goose Egg program. And we are at $1,090 in the hole, with every bit of that to pay in bills and then some.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I'd kind of like for us to make it all the way to 20 years old, but we're a couple, year and a half or so away from that. But that reminds me of something else that I've been keeping track of a little bit. And that is the status of our Podbean download history. Yeah, let's see.
Did we make it?
Well, we were within spitting distance of a half a million downloads on Podbean, which we've only been at for, a few years. Certainly not the majority of time we've been on air here. But there it is. There it is. For the entire time that we have been, I've been uploading to Podbean, we are now in excess of 500,000 total downloads. And that ain't shabby for a little program that struggles to exist from one day to the next, one month to the next. It's a big damn deal. I wonder who the 500,000th download was. There's no way for me to know. But that's still pretty freaking cool.
I know I've got a couple hundred in there. When I miss the program during the normal hours. But I figured, with it being as ironic a week as it's been for me and for the country, I figured I'd call in.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad indeed that you did. Dave, give our best to the boys and girls down at the shop. Tell them to make sure they lock up the nail guns because apparently one was used at the FBI office in Cincinnati today.
Well, that one did not come from our shop. We did a count on all the nail guns in the shop.
It's like surgical instruments. You count them in, you count them out.
Right, and I may have to hire extra security now. It's management. Where do I get fake security people? I know.
Competent fake security people.
Oh, well, you're right. They should be competent fake security people. If I phone down Donald and tell him, hey, look, I need some security for my business, what would you recommend? I'd probably have to run away from the phone. Either that or glass down in HR will,
take a staple gun to me, and don't want that.
Yeah, don't get on the wrong side of Gladys.
No, no. You know, I like to think I run the place, but really, the power is with Gladys. You know, she could say, "Dave, you haven't taken your vacation time. You're required to take your vacation time." Oh, I tell you, Robert, it's a pain.
Now I understand. But well, Dave, you have yourself a wonderful evening. I'm going to wrap things up here and get the uploads done and onward to a million. Onward to a million.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Dave.
Good night, Robert.
Bye now. Be good. Our buddy Dave in the blind calling from Taliban, Indiana. A couple of interesting little stories on the way out the door. And thank you, Emilio, for making sure it wasn't a goose egg. Thank you so much. We are now down to 1087.50. 1087.50. Thank you, Emilio. You remember Glenn Youngkin? He's the maggot light governor of old Virginia, who was swept to office on a boatload of money from wingnut organizations obsessed with high school lacrosse and who plays it and potties and critical race theory, right? It's been a long time since I have heard this name, not Glenn Youngkin's. But God, remember the Carlyle Group? Holy crap, yeah, wait a minute, what? The Carlyle Group? Yeah, all the way back to the Raisin Brain administration. Hi, Mike. Dim leaders' inner brain trust circle was up to their single eyebrows in the Carlyle Group. They were central to the grift that was Bush War II against the innocent people of Iraq. And I had no idea, but up until 2020, for a few years, the guy who would become the maggot light governor of Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, was the co-director of the Carlyle Group, co-chief executive. And it turns out, according to a lawsuit filed by a shareholder, that there was maybe some funny business going on with the money there at that humongous private equity company. There was a deal inside the Carlyle Group called Project Phoenix. And through Project Phoenix, Glenn Youngkin got $8.5 million worth of Carlyle stock. Wait for it. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. How about that? Several Carlyle executives got some of that sweet, sweet money, including the founder of the group, David Rubenstein. Taken together, they all got more than $200 million worth of combined shares. And whose pocket did those shares come out of? Of course, police and firefighters. The lawsuit's been filed in the Chancery Court of Delaware. It has been brought by the Pittsburgh Comprehensive Municipal Pension Trust Fund. And they said that the $344 million deal substantially harmed the stockholders of Carlyle Group. And they got nothing in return when they funded the tax-free payday. And then the inside players at Carlyle, according to the lawsuit, somehow or another dodged a tax bill that would have been over $1 billion. And in essence, the complaint in court says that Rubenstein, Youngkin, and other Carlyle officials, well, they enriched themselves, self-dealt themselves, at the expense of police and firefighters. And it's complicated. But there's a bit of a tie-in, because that's the very kind of bunch that Curtsy and Kyrsten Sinema went to bat for when she said she would not sign off on the Infrastructure Reduction Act of 2022 unless her private equity pals got their way and the carried interest provision was deleted from the deal. And now we know that she has taken over, you know, a minute ago I said we've had 500,000 downloads. Well, she's taken over $500,000, Curtsy and Kyrsten Sinema has, in campaign contributions from private equity executives just during the current election cycle alone. Brown University political economist Mark Blythe said, remember the days when taking $500,000 from an industry and then passing legislation that only benefits that industry while passing the costs on to everyone else would be called corruption? Today, it's just lobbying as usual. Well, you know, you can buy a lot of age-inappropriate outfits with that $500,000 and call them a campaign wardrobe. I'll be damned. Oh, well. There we are. Just another day. Just more corruption. And good luck to the Pittsburgh Municipal Employees Pension Fund Trust. Good. Make it sting. Yeah. So there we are. That's the end of the program. Tomorrow we will be at $1,387.50. $1,387.50 for Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to all of our a la carte contributors. Thank you this evening to Amelia. Thank you, Ralphs, for always being there. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Get your boosters. Learn what you need to know about things like polio and monkeypox and I guess some COVID regulations were relaxed today. Great. Wear your masks in crowded places. It ain't safe out there. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep your social distance 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And of course, you know, if somebody comes galumphing and burbling towards you saying things like, we have a list and we're going to take them out, avoid that Georgia peach pit maggot like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.